You're listening to The Front Page, 94.7. The Pulse, lots has happened in the Australia-Chinese relationships since we last spoke to Leonie McKeon. She's back this morning to clear it up. Leonie, good morning to you.
Good morning, Rob.
Great to have you aboard again. Now, I suppose the biggest thing, well, a couple of big things, but let's deal with the first one. Federal government made a decision to take over negotiations of all international arrangements in Australia, removing the states out of that particular deal, which of course would affect the Belt and Road, the very controversial Belt and Road arrangement that the Victorian state government had made with China. What's the repercussions of that?
Well, the repercussions of that, Rob, are that with the Belt and Road position, is that the Belt and Road was never really concrete anyway, because it is actually what we call a memorandum of understanding, also practical, it's a practical cooperation framework agreement. So, it's not actually cast in stone. However, I think with the Belt and Road, from the very beginning, there were issues when the Belt and Road wasn't actually advising the Canberra on what they were doing. So we've got a bit of a situation here where we've got state and we've got the federal government. So, and now the federal government's come in and said that they want to take over these kinds of things. So whether it's just slash to the Belt and Road, I'm not quite sure. There have been no decisions made on that. But what I would like to say about the Belt and Road situation, Belt and Road deal, potential deal in Victoria, is that that encompasses many kinds of things. So with any deal, it would be very, you know, advantageous to look at every deal separately, and I think to, you know, cross every T and dot every I. So if it's infrastructure and if it's a piece of infrastructure, okay, what does Victoria get out of it? What does China get out of it? And this, like any deal, is a negotiation. So we have to really see, okay, how do China negotiate? How do they think? And how are we going to get the best out of this? How are both parties going to get the best out of it? So, and I don't know whether, you know, the Belt and Road has ever really been looked at in such detail.
Yeah, it's certainly put a cat amongst the pigeons in people's thoughts. Those, the conspiracy theorists, very concerned about China's status with us after the outbreak of the pandemic, that we were extremely vulnerable, and to have a business arrangement like that put Australians at risk. But of course, on the other side, the investment into Victoria and the possibility for more economic growth and development and jobs got some excited. So somewhere in the middle of all that, I guess, is the truth, but it's just working through it, isn't it?
It is, and like any deal, both sides have to, you know, get what they want out of it and not to over-compromise. That's like any relationship or any deal we're in. If we over-compromise, then down the track, then we're not happy. So, I would see that the Belt and Road has many, many, many things inside it, not just, oh, we're going to invest in Victoria and there'll be jobs and this kind of thing. I think that was the idea to build the Victorian economy up and to create jobs and you know, all these kinds of situations. However, it's a kind of thing that has to be looked at in great detail. And now with the government putting their piece on it here about having to control the negotiations and the decisions, I think the Belt and Road probably is at risk now. But it has been over the last year or so, Rob. I think there have been, you know, there have been discussions about what the Belt and Road actually encompasses, and that has been a bit of a question for people along the way. I don't think they really know what it really means and what investment is going to happen.
Yeah, and you made an interesting point about both sides have to win out of it. Well, we know that Victoria wants infrastructure and it wants to create economic activity. That's a given. But the unknown, of course, is that what do China want out of it? And if that's a long-term foothold in the Australian economic development and culture, then that's the unknown concern, isn't it?
Well, look, you know, we've got China with being expert negotiators, having been brought up with the 36 Chinese strategies, you know, derived from the art of war, as we've spoken about before, fundamental in their culture, and we've got Australia, who actually haven't been brought up with a set of strategies that are about negotiation. So, you know, when it comes to negotiating deals, we are, you know, we are quite a few steps back. So it is about learning how China negotiates, and then we can look at each deal and be able to be evenly balanced. But at the moment, I don't really know whether we know, you know, what China is thinking or how they negotiate, because if it is, you know, if we do go ahead with the Belt and Road, what kind of, you know, what kind of things are Victoria going to get out of it, and how are they going to negotiate their way through this? And to do that, we really need to know what China is thinking, and to understand what China is thinking, we need to know about their fundamental cultural aspects inside negotiation.
Yeah, correct. Just on that, which of these 36 strategies of business discussion do you think was implemented when a recent Chinese official at the National Press Club made the statement that you've hurt our feelings over the potential investigation into the start of the pandemic in Wuhan?
Well, as far as a strategic, I was thinking about this, and whether this is a strategy coming from the 36 strategies or, you know, I think that when Mr. Wang Xining made that speech, made that address at the National Press Club in Canberra, he really did talk about what has actually happened. And that could be, you know, that could be strategy 32, you know, the strategy of the open gates, where you actually just open everything up and say, okay, this is what we are thinking. And I don't know whether that has actually ever been explained before, because we've gone from, you know, from the beginning of the pandemic, and now we're here. And he actually took us back to the beginning of where it happened. Now, you know, that address to the National Press Club seems to me as a place to start. Okay, this is what happened. This is why we are upset. So I'd say in that sense, Strategy 32, and there's nothing wrong with Strategy 32, it's about just opening up and saying, okay, this is what's happened.
To do that, though, they would either be in a position of desperation or great strength, and you would think at this particular stage China would see themselves in a position of great strength.
That's true. That is true. However, with this particular strategy, it is what we call a desperate strategy. Now, the last six strategies of the 36 strategies are the desperate strategies, and desperate meaning it's not desperate, because you have to look at the, you know, the actual meaning underneath the literal meaning. However, it is about revealing and opening up and saying, you know, this is what we are thinking. Now, I don't know whether we can say China is stronger, Australia is stronger. That may be a tit for tat thing. You know, we do this, China does this. But it may be time for the both countries to start talking instead of doing the tit for tat. And that was a very interesting speech of, you know, Mr. Wang Xining's. I thought that he really revealed why China was actually, you know, what China was thinking. And I don't know whether there was a response to that. I'm not quite sure.
Leonie, just out of interest, Kerry here, and great to have you back on.
Hi, Kerry.
How you doing?
Good.
And you being an expert in Chinese relations and negotiations, I have an interest in where does the issue around human rights come into some of these negotiations from your perspective? And I suppose, you know, a less of a democracy over there as well.
Sure. Look, there are two. We are dealing with two completely different political structures, Kerry.
Mm, yeah.
You know, it's very easy and difficult at the same time to say, okay, this is these are what we think of democracy and human rights, and this is what China thinks. There must be somewhere in the middle, because China has essentially, you know, one government, an authoritarian government. We have much more of a democratic system. However, there are several layers of democracy, and, you know, we need to come somewhere in the middle. We know that we are dealing with a country that thinks completely differently, because this has been, you know, an issue. You know, we have had these discussions in the past, you know, about human rights and about democracy and this kind of thing. And that's been going along quite well for the last 10 or 15 years. We've been able to come in the middle. But I think the pandemic has been the spark to set off all of these things.
Right, okay, yeah.
Yeah, so there definitely are two different systems, and this is about understanding how this system works and how we work. And I don't think Australia wants to put our system on China, and I don't think China wants to put their system on us. I think this is about coming in the middle, not compromising, but being able to agree on certain things so we can get this relationship moving again as it was before.
Right, okay.
Leanne, we haven't got time today, but I've always been intrigued by the assumption that a Chinese cultural model has a group of people up at the top who control the population, and the population work together. But because of the fact that the Chinese provide our greatest amount of tourism and business development, and there's clearly a lot of very wealthy individuals and a lot of wealth in the middle class that's very fluid wealth because it moves freely around the world, it's not true communism as such, because it has an element of capitalism that sits above a communist model. I'm quite intrigued about how it works. We'll do it in more detail some other day, but is that the way it sort of works?
Well, it is, and, you know, with any political structure, there are several layers. I mean, there's several different versions of capitalism. There's a lot of versions of communism. Mm. And, you know, China is a place that they both work together. Other places they may not. So that's a very complex type of situation, because you're right, we can go to China and see, you know, and see places you know, looking very capitalistic and very private sector, and then we've got the state-owned enterprises. You know, so the two systems work together, and for us, coming from what we come from, we think, oh, gee, well, this really looks so capitalist. Where is the other political structure? However, there are several layers and there are several definitions and versions of different political structures, because we are very diverse, you know, we are very diverse all over the world in different countries, and Australia is a very large country, China is a very large country, China has several provinces and each province is quite different too, so, you know, it's not just one size of that political structure fits the whole country, especially now in 2020. Maybe many years ago that was the case, but not so much now.
Yeah. Before I let you go today, I want to talk about agriculture, because I must confess to more than a passive interest, very much a vested financial interest. And we talked about the effects on the barley in particular and beef some time ago, and the ongoing issues were there. And I believe another Queensland abattoir has been cut off from supply into China. The unknown and the one that I'm most involved in is the wool industry. There's been about a 40% downturn in that, in an environment where China manufacture probably 90% of the total wool on the planet goes to China for manufacturing, I would think. It might even be more than that. That sort of influence that the country has on how agriculture, do you think it'll eventually settle down, or does it look like they may take this foothold and really push down hard on it?
Well, it is about us being able to talk to China, China talk to us, and re-establishing the relationship, maybe not as it was before, it may be different, but re-establishing the relationship so that we can have this trade going ahead. Because we are seeing things every week, you know, wine, barley, you know, all of the things in agriculture. So as we continue down this road, we may continue to see this happen. But if we, you know, understand China and understand how they think, and look at how we can look at the relationship again. And because China is our greatest trading partner, and I don't think we can do without China, because they are a very large trading partner and have been for many years. And maybe inside a relationship, this is a hiccup, a very large hiccup, but every relationship has its issues, and the way to get through those is to talk through them and to be able to understand how the other side thinks. So in answer to your question, I think that may continue if we continue down this path. We have to really, somehow this path has to change.
Yeah, definitely. Leonie, thank you so much again. We really enjoy, this is your third visit, and it's been enlightening every time, and we'll definitely seek out to have you back on again in the future. We might just delve into more of the cultural issues rather than trade issues around China and how that affects you and in your role of negotiating with business strategy. So I find it quite intriguing, but really appreciate your insights again today.
Thanks very much, Rob. Thank you very much.
Absolute pleasure.
Yes, thanks, Leonie.
Leonie McKeon.